Now, let me fantasize for a minute that I am a spy thriller writer and I need a plot for one. A spy thriller in the genre of Le Carré, Frederick Forsyth, Dominic Lapierre, Larry Collins. There is no harm in fantasizing. But if it were so, what is the most fantastic, most terrific, brilliant plot I could hatch? Or a situation in terms of the geopolitical calendar of the world. So one, there will be Iran, not far from its elections, where its reigning president cannot contest again because of the term limitation. Then the foreign minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, lands in Tehran. On the same day or around the same day, the American Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, lands in Jerusalem and is talking to his counterpart Benny Gantz, who is the Israeli defense minister, the former chief of military staff and now an opponent of Netanyahu, plus at the same time his cabinet colleague. We've told you that story many times before, and he's talking to Netanyahu as well. So those guys are there. While all this is happening, far away in Vienna, that famous spy capital of the world from Cold War times. In Vienna, a large group of diplomats from a bunch of key countries are meeting. What are these countries? You can name all the key countries of the world, except of course India isn't there. We think we are the biggest key in all capitals. But the key countries here include Russia, Britain, Germany, and China, and this is a group that is working under the chairmanship of EU. The Americans are there and the Iranians are there, but Americans and Iranians don't meet each other because Iranians don't want to meet Americans. So the Americans are sitting in a hotel while this group of diplomats from these many countries are figuring out how to bring back the US-Iranian peace deal or joint comprehensive plan of action or JCPOA back on rails, because that was cancelled, because that's the word that's like these days, that was cancelled by Donald Trump as most unfair, most stupid, etc., etc. So he had written that off. Biden is now committed to restoring it. The Iranian government wants it because that would mean the lifting of American sanctions and also Iran once again promising to abide by the discipline and controls on its uranium enrichment program. Now, if you see all this, I'm just giving you the plot, the geopolitical calendar of the world for my plot of the finest possible thriller. In the middle of all this, there is a place called Natanz. Now, Natanz, 155 kilometers south of Tehran, in the desert, in a very, very desolate area, is where Iran's most important nuclear facility is, because that is where they have the largest number of the most modern centrifuges. Centrifuges are used, and these are not centrifuges that run at a speed we can see. These are centrifuges that run at a supersonic plus speed. These centrifuges are used to enrich uranium. Enriched uranium, the more enriched uranium is, the more you can do with it. But beyond a level, if it gets enriched, then it becomes weapons grade uranium. So the Iranian effort all these years has been to produce weapons grade uranium. The world's effort, that means the Western world, even Russia, China, everybody. Nobody wants another country with nuclear weapons. Even India doesn't want, because if that happens, that will also be, underline this word, this expression, it will also be the second Islamic country with nuclear weapons. So you will have like a Sunni country with nuclear weapons and a Shia country with nuclear weapons. And Iran doesn't have many enemies. It has essentially one enemy, that is Israel. It's not a territorial enemy. It's an ideological enemy. So there is this nuclear facility, but to be seen to have the capability of enriching uranium is very important from Iran, because this is the one leverage it has got with the rest of the world, particularly the Americans, Israelis, and the rest. It has a lot of wealth in oil, crude oil sitting under its soil and under its water off its coast, but this is the one bargaining chip it has. So if you set up your plot like this, what happens? Then it's even more fun in terms of just the calendar. Likar, Frederick Forsyth could not have chosen a better beginning. So Iranians have an annual National Nuclear Technology Day. That is the day when they flaunt the fact that they are making advances in nuclear technology. Remember, officially Iran says that they don't want nuclear weapons, they will never have nuclear weapons, they don't have the same bad morals as, say, of the Western world. So why should we want nuclear weapons? We just want them for energy, in spite of the fact that we have more energy sitting with us in terms of crude oil than almost any country in the world. But never mind that, we want this for energy. But every year on this day, National Nuclear Technology Day, Iran flaunts its quote-unquote progress in nuclear technology. Now, this National Nuclear Technology Day was just a day before our story begins. And that day, Iran made big announcements of the progress they had made. They also talked about the progress they had made with the new centrifuges at the Natanz facility. So much so that they also produced a video which was shown on Iranian TV, or let me say which is shown on Iranian TV, where you have Iranian nuclear scientists in the proper white robes, etc., etc., singing songs, and also displaying pictures of those Iranian nuclear scientists who've been assassinated by the Israelis, or allegedly by the Israelis in the past, Israeli intelligence in the past. You remember, we had done an entire Kartak letter on this, the Kartak letter 629, of which I will share a link with you, on the killing of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, who was the head of the Israeli, of the Iranian weapons program, and that was in December. Now, when all this is happening in this mood of celebration, the very next day, within 24 hours of this celebration, and while Lavrov is there and Austin is there and people are meeting in Vienna, while all this stuff is going on, and Netanyahu is also waiting, because you know he's had a fourth election that's been indecisive. If he loses power, he gets prosecuted in his corruption cases. If he's holding a constitutional position, he's protected. His president has given me 2 or 3 weeks to get together a majority. So he has to do something. Otherwise, Israel is up in the air. The power in Israel is up in the air. At that point of time, a big explosion takes place. Where else but Natanz? Doesn't take place on the surface. Natanz is a very secure facility, very hardened, several layers of security, as you would imagine, controlled directly by Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, Iran's most elite, ideologically driven, committed body. So this explosion goes off under 20 feet of hardened concrete, 20 feet of hardened concrete, which would resist any bomb, even a daisy cutter falling from the top. But this explosion takes place under it. Explosion takes place in a way that it knocks out all of the power supply in this plant. That means primary power supply as well as secondary power supply. Now, this is how this new thriller begins, with one difference. This is not a plot that I conjured up. I wish I had, and I wish I had that talent. But this is exactly what has happened. These are the facts as they unfolded this Sunday, that is day before yesterday, less than 48 hours before I started recording this episode of Cut the Clutter. So now there is a lot of consternation. You know, who was where, who's up to what, whose interests are what, and at this time this explosion happens. This explosion happens. This is not a faltu operation. This is a very serious operation. This is a very, very serious operation. It's also a very successful operation. So on all estimates, I see stories in the New York Times, FT, everywhere. Also an article by Bobby Ghosh, who used to be the editor of Hindustan Times, is a Middle East domain specialist. His article on Bloomberg, we published on the print.in. So I will share that article also with you. If you read all that, you can see that this facility, the attack on this facility has set back Iran's uranium enrichment plans by at least another 9 months. That's a lot. Because remember what the talks with Americans are all about, Americans and the rest of the world, because you know, it's a group of countries that signed up on JCPOA. The talks are about creating a 1 year gap minimum between Iran being able to progress to weapons grade uranium. It's for Iran to try and make it shorter, because the shorter Iran makes it, the more insecure Israel and its other neighbors, which includes Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states, the more insecure they become. The more insecure they become, the stronger Iran's negotiating position becomes. So JCPOA, as it was signed, that was meant to create that 1 year gap, because both America and Israel are committed on this. Biden and Netanyahu are together, that they will not allow Iran to come anywhere close to nuclear weapons capability, because Israel sees it as an existential threat, because the only country that Iranians have ever talked of wiping out or annihilating or finishing or vaporizing, whatever you may call it, is Israel. Because that also features very keenly or in a very key manner in their power struggle in the Islamic world, because they are struggling for supremacy with Islamic countries on the other side of the Persian Gulf or the Arabian Gulf, depending on which side you are on, you can choose your name. But essentially the Saudis and the Gulfies who are now making peace with Israel. So this is all that complication, and this plot has actually happened in real life. Now, how did the Iranians react? Important thing is to look at how did each one reacted. Israelis did not react officially. Israelis traditionally neither confirm nor deny these things. Americans said quickly, we had nothing to do with this. But Lloyd Austin was in Jerusalem. When they were asked a question about this in their joint press conference, he and Benny Gantz, his Israeli counterpart, a journalist asked a question, but Benny Gantz cut him short because he did not want his guest to get into answering a question like that. So also in the Israeli media, anonymous Israeli officials have been quoted as having said that this was our operation. Now, when this has happened, there is no doubt left that this was an Israeli operation. Now, you can be speculating on whether this was an Israeli operation in cooperation with the Americans or not. I mean, you can choose to be innocent or gullible if you so prefer. As far as I am concerned, having watched this for a long time, I shall have no such suspicions. Certainly, this would not have happened without America's not just okay, but maybe some kind of help. Now, what does this achieve for anybody? For Israel and America, what it does achieve is it weakens Iran's negotiating position, because we just told you what is Iran's negotiating chip. Negotiating chip is, I am getting closer to uranium enrichment. You want to buy a year of me, the gap of a year, then do this, and lift all the sanctions. At this point, Iran faces 1,600 sanctions from America, half of which were put by Donald Trump later. In fact, many of these sanctions were not even linked to Iran's nuclear program. Those were linked to Iran's human rights record and things like that, or support to terrorism, because Iran also supports Hezbollah, Hamas, Bashar al-Assad's government in Syria. It's involved with Shia militias in Iraq. Iran has many fingers in many fires in that region. So there were many more sanctions, and Iran uses this as leverage. So anything that sets back Iran's ability to enrich uranium also weakens its negotiating position. That is one view. The second view is that maybe Netanyahu wants to do it. Netanyahu wants to do it also because, one, it creates a sense of emergency in his country, because he has to now collect Knesset members who are not from his party to say that, come, let me form this coalition. Whether you like me or not, it doesn't matter, because it's a time of crisis. Iranians are getting closer to nuclear weapons. We need a government right now. That trick has been tried by many leaders in many democracies before. Why should Netanyahu not be trying that? So that is the second possibility. Now, we don't know. We can speculate. And again, if you're writing a thriller, we can write two chapters on each one of these possibilities and looking at pros and cons and possibilities and improbabilities. But if you leave all that out, you look at how the Iranians have reacted. Iranians have reacted. Iran's foreign minister Zarif, he spoke on Iranian national radio, Iranian national TV, and he said that the Jews, the Israelis are taking revenge on us for the progress that our nuclear program has made. But we will take revenge on the Zionists for what they have done. So no words minced there. Then if you see a man called Feridun Abbasi. So listen to Feridun Abbasi. Feridun Abbasi heads the energy committee of the Iranian parliament. Iran is an interesting country. It is a dictatorship of the clergy, but wrapped inside that dictatorship of the clergy is also a democracy. So there is an elected parliament, elected prime minister, president, etc. So Feridun Abbasi said in a statement to Iranian media, Iranian official media, that the enemy's plot was very beautiful. Now maybe it's a translation literally from Persian to beautiful, but I've seen most of the Western media has used this. The enemy's plot was very beautiful. I'm looking at it purely from a scientific point of view, he said. They thought about this and used their experts and planned an explosion. So both the central and the backup power systems, that is the central power system and the emergency power system, will be knocked out both at the same time. And that is what happened. Similarly, the spokesman of Iranian Atomic Energy Organization, who is Behrouz Kamalwandi, he also said that, look, this was an explosion. It was so big, the hole was so big, that I actually tripped into it. I fell, I hurt my head, my neck, my arms, and things like that. Now, the belief right now is that this was not done through a cyber attack, that this was a physical device, that an explosive device was smuggled into the facility, up right into that nerve center, from where it would blow out all of the power facilities in the plant, in the super, 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 super secret plant. Now, how did that happen? This could not have happened without the complicity of people high up in the Iranian government and the security machinery. This also could not have happened unless someone inside the plant was involved in this. And that someone got this device into the plant, put it in that place, and then left that place so this device could be then set off remotely. That is precisely what has happened. Now, this is a very big humiliation for the Iranian government and the Iranian security agency also, because just a few months back, as I mentioned to you, they lost their top nuclear scientist, Mohsin Fakhrizadeh. He was killed by a remotely controlled weapon. It was like a machine gun or a submachine gun that was controlled from a distance, and he was shot like that, he was killed like that, and Iranians have not been able to do anything. And they talked revenge then, they are talking revenge now, they've talked revenge every time. But the fact is, they've rarely been able to take any real revenge, definitely not in terms of any blood. But who knows what will they do now? And if they move towards revenge, then it will make life much tougher also for Joe Biden, who wants to move back to the JCPOA deal. And that is where the complication lies right now. Now, Israel and Iranians keep sparring with each other. Israel keeps attacking Iranian tankers, taking crude, for example, to Syria in the Red Sea, in the Mediterranean. Iranians, whenever they can, they snipe at Israeli shipping going out of the Persian Gulf or the Arabian Gulf. Recently, the Israelis also attacked an Iranian ship, which they said was used to transport marine commandos. That ship was attacked somewhere near the coast of Yemen. So that tamasha goes on. But that is routine. Now let us see if Iranians in retaliation do something which is out of the routine. Now just before we conclude this, let me also remind you that Natanz is a facility which has been in the crosshairs of both the Israelis and the Americans for a long time. So almost a decade back under Obama, and this is an operation which was then, details of which were revealed later. This operation was called Operation Olympic Games, in which the Americans, that is the CIA, and the Israelis, that is Mossad, they had collaborated to carry out a cyber attack on the same Natanz facility almost 10 years back. So a cyber attack was carried out to knock out this facility. Essentially, the centrifuges at this facility. So the malware they used was something called Stuxnet. I don't know very much about it, but something called Stuxnet. And that is a famous case. Now, almost 10 years later, this National Nuclear Technology Day, Iranians were flaunting the fact that any damage done then had been repaired, and if anything, they had replaced those earlier centrifuges with even more efficient, even more advanced centrifuges, so they could now move even faster than before. And now, as we see, even this is gone. So this is gone. The top nuclear scientist heading the nuclear program had gone just 6 months back. Several other scientists have died. So you can see that while a big Cold War builds up between America and China, a semi-cold, semi-hot war is already on in the Middle East with the involvement of America, Israel, Iran, and the rest of the world's powers sitting in Vienna trying to bring about peace. And so now that I've given you the plot, please write your own thrillers.